across the sands or deep.
There's going to be a donkey.
No, you can't have this track. I'm going to keep this track. This is my track now. You can't have it back. I have to look at it so I can read. Obey and live.
Turmoil.
That's what I say.
So
yes, Lord.
That is you.
Yes. Was
this is
scary?
Some new power button.
Jeez.
And did he?
It's just a sound effect. Damn it!
Something.
What? Oh, look.
Oh,
now
oh, it's the. I think it, this is one of the Mighty Morphine Power Rangers or something like that.
We have our youthful genes and we have our ancient geriatric genes.
Yes, the aged ingenue is tottering out of the old age home. Nonetheless, then the youngest.
Yes, player, geriatric Jerry Lewis fans.
The youth teen action singers, I saw them before in Provo, Utah, Ransom, Missouri, and Lynchburg, Virginia. The What's Up with Teens happy caravan is traveling maybe to your town.
Hey, watch it. All right, we're just getting up to speed here, approaching the terminal. Marvelous time when it ceremonially changes from one day to another, and I'm sure you're going to be right here with us when that happens here on the Ask Dr. Hal Show, live on radio on RadioValencia.fm. Drive it or park it, lady.
Peanut butter.
Dale Embry goes away to script and tells of his life.
Dale Embry is a profound
only
thinker.
He could think of. From his ownership of a gay bar to eating the Bible.
Guys, let's get out of here.
From all his
just
all-time
minute,
low
I'm trying to pick up this,
to his all-time track. High, which is yet to come. Dale is bound for glory and gagged from there.
Israel is going to be attacked by Magog on the plain of Megiddo.
What we're doing right now is taping.
Then scorpions with the faces of little bitty guys but with great big teeth come. And
so we're on the field right now with Bud Good.
In some respect, they are similar to locusts or grasshoppers or more than crickets. In other respects,
most of this is my boss.
Big field.
Even though they have
there is coffee.
Yeah,
it's fine. So you have to get your own firearm.
Stinging torture.
You go hunting for the coffee.
Insect attack.
Oh, my God.
What are you talking about? Show is
all in the Bible. Veritably in Scripture.
Questions as, if you're not in a prayer meeting, does that mean...
Now I got
a... A Kabbalist text is almost 2,000 years old. Tells us God has also set the one over against the other, the good against the evil, and the evil against the good. The good proceeds from the good.
Well, he's got to entertain himself somehow.
The good purifies the bad, and the bad the good. The good is preserved for the good, and the evil for the bad. Underlying the two game players, there is God. There is neither, and
it's not so easy to preserve. Evil
both players become purified.
This is
thus, the ancient Hebrew monotheism so superior to our own view. We are creatures in a game with our spirit in a version predetermined
for a coffee going to be named
not by blind chance, but by patient foresighted
engineering
systems that we dimly see.
We named him .com
full frontal exposure.
Were we to see them clearly, we would abolish the game. Evidently, that would not serve anyone's interest.
Lamb chop, that was one of Sherry Lewis's puppets, wasn't it?
And anyhow, we have a choice. Not until the tropism is left. And under certain circumstances, they can and do. And that
a simple tropism.
What we must realize is that this deception, this obscuring things as if under a veil, the veil of Maya, it has been called, this is not an end in itself.
I guess
as if the universe is somehow perverse and likes to foil us, per se.
Well, we actually it does.
We realize
but,
that a veil, called by the Greeks Dokos, lies between us and reality, is that this veil serves a benign purpose.
Hey, I think you got it.
It conceals from us the cosmic horrors.
So many sermons friends I have made and who has ever listened to him or paid attention. And if you went to XA back in those days, you could hear them hear me going on and on in the central pavilion.
Yokos, or the veil, exists and conceals ultimate reality. We see very much the same notion expressed by St. Paul when he speaks about our seeing as if by the reflection on the bottom of a polished metal pan, which is more accurate translation than saying the more familiar through a glass darkly.
Well, they didn't have glass like that.
As if by the reflection on the bottom of a polished metal pan.
A glass.
And in this statement, St. Paul is referring to the
ordinary glass, drinking glass like we have, would cost the equivalent of $1,000 in the Roman Empire. Roman money in Cistercian.
I wish to add that Paul was probably saying one thing more than Plato in the celebrated metaphor of the cave.
Mirrors were made of polished metal, highly polished and shiny metal.
The extraordinary thrust of this thought just simply cannot be taken in, even if we intellectually grasp it. You see the universe backwards. What would that mean? Well, let me give you one possibility.
We should talk about the
that we experience time backwards. One more precisely than our guess is
a he's one of those smothered truckers.
We arrange experience. Our time experience is orthogonal to the flow of time itself. At right
now, I'm going to keep drinking this stuff.
Either it is our experience or perception or construct of ontological matrix, an extensiveness along with space as an inseparable extensiveness into another area. This is real, but the
folks.
The universe moves in a different direction.
Okay. We're over the line.
By experiencing time as we do,
from Friday into Saturday,
we get a totally wrong idea of the sequence.
Welcome
of
to Saturday.
So of what is past and what is future, where the universe is going.
Well, what will happen in the next just 100 years?
Limosaurs and oysterettes, a giant
hope. The universe is just a great big smiling face, a laughing and a giggling way out in outer space.
Should we close the door upstairs?
Yeah, exactly. I think you and I should go close the upstairs door.
Okay, let's go close the door.
Now, while we're gone, do not open this 100-year plan.
The valve? I'm not planning to open anything.
I have the tome on my desk, and I have my eye on the
valve.
But as you know, I'm not situated to reach any of the controls. The way you said it has to be the way that it is.
And besides, I've got a call coming in, an important phone call. Yeah, right. Still about an hour to go. See, what I'm going to do is, as I have been doing recently, close down a little bit before the regular time, so I have the time to put everything back together, so it's in one bag, which I can come and grab when I finally return from the tattoo parlor after the underground cartooning session.
But time in itself is not moving from our past to our future. Its orthogonal axis leads it to a rotary cycle in which, for example, we have been spinning our wheels, so to speak, in the parking lot. It's a vast winter of our species that has lasted already about 2,000 of our lineal time years. Evidently, orthogonal time, or true time, rotates something like primitive cycling time, within which each year was regarded as the same year. Each new crop, the same crop. In fact, each spring was the same spring again. What destroyed man's ability to perceive time in this overly simple way was that he himself as an individual spanned too many of these years and could see that he himself wore out, was not renewed each year like the corn crops of bulbs and roots and trees. He grew old. There had to be a more adequate idea of time than the simple cyclic time, so he developed, reluctantly, lineal time, which is an accumulative time, a Bergson time. As Bergson showed, it goes in only one direction and is added to, or adds to, everything as it sweeps along. True orthogonal time is rotary, but on a vaster scale, much like the great year of the ancients, much too like Dante's idea of the time rate of eternity that you find expressed in the Divine Comedy. During the Middle Ages, such thinkers as Erigena had begun to suggest true eternity or timelessness would exist. But others had begun to sense that eternity involved time. Timelessness would be a static state, although the time would be quite different from our perception of it. A clue lay in St. Paul's reiteration that the final days of the world would be the time of restoration of all things. He had evidently experienced this orthogonal time enough to understand that it contains it as a simultaneous plane or extension, and in it everything that was, just as the grooves on an old analog LP, an angelic LP, not a demonic digital device. And anyway, these grooves, consider them as as an artifact representing time. The grooves contain the part of the music that has already been played.
See, let but they don't universal.
The stylus tracks them. See,
next in a horrore secretus
est spiral, and can be represented entirely in a plane geometry sort of way in space.
Look at Nocturnibus Ignis, chorus aegipanum nipundique personatur.
The idea of dysfunction such as bounce back and bounce forward.
Audiuntur cantus tibiorum, tinnitus cimbalorum, per orum maritimum.
Is possible. If such time slips as time control dictates were to occur, they would serve a purpose for
your
us.
Your time slip is showing.
We would suddenly learn a great deal more about our universe. I believe these ontological dysfunctions in time do occur, but that our brains automatically generate false memory systems to obscure them at once. The reason for this carries back to my premise. The veil, or dokos, is there to deceive us for a good reason, and such disclosures as these time dysfunctions make are to be obliterated, that this benign purpose be maintained. Within a system that must generate an enormous amount of failings, it would be vainglorious to expostulate on what actuality is when my premise declares that were we to penetrate to it for any reason, this strange veil-like dream would reinstate itself retroactively in terms of our perceptions and in terms of our memories. The mutual dreaming would resume as before because I think we are in a state of half-life. We are neither dead nor
so to speak,
but preserved in cold storage, waiting to be thawed out, expressed in the perhaps startlingly familiar terms of the procession of the seasons, this is a winter of which I speak. It is winter for our race, the human race. And it is winter for those inhabitants.
Everybody knows it. Nobody wants to admit it.
Ice and snow cover our world in layers of accretions, which we call dokos, or maya. What melts away the rind or layer of frozen ice over the world each year is, of course, the reappearance of the sun. What melts the ice and snow covering the creatures of our time? What halts the cooling off of their lives? The entropy that they feel? The voice that they hear is none other than that same voice that each bulb and seed and root in the ground, our ground in our wintertime, it hears, wake up, sleepers, awake.
Erwacht.
Well, time, postulated by Dr. Gozarev, as binding together all phenomena and maintaining all life. That by its activity hides the ontological reality beneath its flow. The orthogonal time axis may have been presented without a great deal of subtlety here, but try to follow. This reversion is that of the Platonic ideas or archetypes. A rocket ship mutates backward in time, reverting to a Boeing 747, then back to a World War I Jenny Rocket. While I may indeed have expressed a dramatic view of orthogonal time, it is less certain that this is orthogonal time undergoing an unnatural reversion, i.e., moving backward, going backwards in time. What the characters who undergo this see may be orthogonal time, moving along its normal axis. If we ourselves somehow see the universe reversed, then the reversions of form that objects appear to undergo may be momentum toward perfection. And that implies that our world is extensive in time rather than extensive in space. It's like an onion, an almost infinite number of successive layers. Which
but onions can go bad.
Makes you cry.
I had to throw one away today.
If lineal time seems to add these onion-like layers, then perhaps orthogonal time peels these off, exposing layers of progressively greater being.
Just buy a new onion.
Of Plotinus's view of the universe as consisting concentric rings of
onions were sacred to the ancient Egyptians.
Each one possessing interlayered more reality than the next. Within that ontology, the realm of being, those who now sleep wait for the voice that will awaken them. When I say that they and we are waiting for spring to come, I am not merely using a metaphor. Spring means thermal return, the abolition of the process of entropy. Their life can be expressed in terms of thermal units. And those units have left. It is spring that restores the sproing of that life.
In the spring,
and in some cases, as with us,
a fuller crimson life comes upon the robin's breast.
Slumbering is a period of gestation. Together
in the spring, the wanton lapwing gets himself another crest.
A giant beetle, unfortunately.
In the spring, the livelier iris changes on the burnished dove. In the spring, a young man's fancy lightly turns to thoughts of love.
It was an error for the ancients to believe that for us, as for the vegetable world, the same year return. For us, there is accumulation, the growth of an entelechy for each of us, not yet perfected or completed, and never, ever repeatable. Once once it's gone, it's gone. And like a symphony of Beethoven, each of us is unique. And when this long winter is over, we as new blooms will surprise ourselves and the world around us. What we will do, many of us, is throw off the mere masks that we have worn. Masks that were intended to be taken for reality. Masks that have successfully fooled everyone, as is their purpose.
Then her cheek was pale and thinner than should be for one so young, and her eyes on all my motions with a mute observance hung. And I said, "My cousin Amy, speak the truth and speak to me. Trust me, cousin, all the fullness of my bosom speaks to thee." On her pallid cheek and forehead came a color and a light as I have seen the rosy red flushing in the northern night. And she turned, her bosom shaken by a sudden storm of sighs, all the spirit swiftly dawning in the dark of hazel eyes, saying, "I have hid my feelings, fearing I should do thee wrong." Saying, "Dost thou love me, cousin?" Weeping, "I have loved thee long." Love took up the glass of time and turned it in his glowing hands. Every moment lightly shaken ran itself in golden sands. Love took up the harp of life and smote the chord with all his might. Smote the chord of self, which, trembling, passed in music out of sight. Many a morning by the moorland we would hear the copses ring, and her whisper thronged my pulses with the fullness of the spring. Many an evening by the water we would watch the stately ships, and our hearts would race together at the touching of the lips. Oh, my cousin, shallow-hearted. Oh, my Amy, mine no more. Oh, the dreary, dreary moorland. Oh, the barren, barren shore. Falser than all fancy fathoms. Falser than all songs of sung. Puppet to a father's threat and servile to a shrewish tongue. Is it wrong to wish thee happy, having known me to decline on a lower range of feeling and a narrower heart than mine? But it shall be. Thou shalt lower to his level day by day what is fine within thee growing coarse to sympathize with clay. As the husband is, the wife is. Thou art mated with a clown, and the grossness of his nature will have weight to drag thee down. He shall hold thee when his passion shall have spent its novel course. Something better than his dog, a little dearer than his horse. What is this? His eyes are weary. Think not they are glazed with wine. Go to him. It is thy duty. Kiss him. Take his hand in thine. It may be my lord is weary, that his brain is overwrought. Soothe him with thy lighter fancy. Touch him with thy lighter thought. He will answer to the purpose, easy things to understand. Better thou wert dead before me, though I slew thee with my hand. Better thou and I were perished, hidden from the heart's disgrace, rolled in one another's arms, and silent in a last embrace.
fog and mist and twilight of winter.
By now, soon we will converge.
I've lifted the warm
mass. Let's go to the train. Let's go on the train. It'll make you feel better. Relax as we go across the
beautiful... All aboard! The Rocky Railroad to success.
I got the bandit ball.
Yee-haw!
Hold on tight. Another subgenius noticed the band.
And they're going out of town. They're heading west today.
Well, partying with the subgeniuses, better than the Masons and the Elks put together. Still have my fez, see?
All the subgeniuses are taking the train and gathering in the beautiful hotel. Sorry, that's security information.
That's the Imhotep Hotel in the sands of the desert.
And they'll be there, too. Onan, Byron Werner, Sterno. I'm sure they'll all be there.
Living in fool's paradise.
And think of the meat that will be there, cooking and sizzling on the barbecue.
I thought he said meat.
It's this classic radio show and barbecue.
Barbecue?
For as it says in the book of Genesis, chapter 9, verse 3, every moving thing that there shall be meat.
What's going to happen there? Well, we're going to have...
Yeah, right, and it is not meat that it should be otherwise.
Sort of like a subgenius retreat, a hierarchy retreat. We'll have our hierarchy.
There'll be plenty to eat at the subgenius retreat, and it'll be meat.
100 years will be our topic of discussion at the panel discussion. I know it sounds like a humorous topic, but we expect to be serious for at least a few minutes there. Then, of course, we will do our regular guest spots.
Well, let's show the folks a little bit of the regular guest spots.
Old-fashioned Wotan jam.
Rub those grease spots.
And along with our Wotan jamming, after the Wotan jamming, there may be a panel discussion. We're probably going to have our...
Good Lord, it sounds like an endless series of business meetings.
That's going to last about 5 minutes. We are going to talk about the next 100 years. We don't expect it to take 100 years. We're going to just, a few minutes.
197 years.
We're going to have probably our banquet awards dinner, where we'll give away the awards.
Try 374.
Of the century,
and you can take that
century.
To the banquet. And you know who one of them is likely to be? That's probably Imhotep III.
That's true.
AKA
also, Michael, aren't you Dr. Apollo?
Yes, now Michael Pepe, he's another one of us, you know.
The restoration of the old church?
Yes, the Back to the Family movement.
No, there was such a movement.
Yes, you did.
You're signed, baby. I saw your signature.
We talked about the Back to the Family movement. You and I...
Could we go somewhere a little more quiet? This place is getting on my nerves.
The Back to the Family
back
movement.
To the essential basis of America.
Right, back to our original tract.
Yes, because we are dealing with people who are...
We're fundamentalists.
They're light years behind us.
Not only that, they've taken our basic doctrine and they've bastardized it. They've gone in directions that Bob never intended. We need to get back to the pamphlet and a fundamentalist return to the patriarchal, psychotic, anarcho-materialism that we know we can achieve. This is the world of the future from the past. Yes, thank you.
Most interested in this sort of...
We will be tomorrow, today.
What we saw as the...
That's the theme of Burning Man this year.
And then it was the future. Tomorrow is going to be yesterday. And we're going to have to go forward with yesterday's vision of the future today, transplanted into tomorrow.
He's almost to the bridge. There's 420 guy. That's the red one, the red sensor.
5-420 guy.
Oh, he's just down getting on the highway.
He's already gone. He's out.
He stood on the bridge that was bordered on both sides by blackness.
Sorry about
Philo,
from the mightiest forests of oak and the staff that he
blended.
Ash from a tree that had stood while it witnessed the death throes of primary ages, remote from the creeping black shadow.
You're in the studio, you're in the mix, you're right in the middle of the mix. Your head is in
facing the darkness, JBL monitors are just conquered. He pondered the powers behind me are mighty, but also
you're going to be there with the road warriors and
Renaissance. Right hand was shining in both swords. Landring was shining. It rang as the evil blade struck it.
Oh,
poor human form, said she, O thou poor child of woe, why wilt thou wander away from Tirsa? Why me compelled to bind thee? If thou dost go away from me, I shall consume upon these rocks these fibers of thine eyes that used to beam in distant heavens away from me. I have bound down with a hot iron. These nostrils that expanded with delight in morning skies, I have bent downward with lead melted in my roaring furnaces of affliction, of love, of sweet despair, of torment unendurable. My soul is seven furnaces. Incessant roars the bellows upon my terribly flaming heart. The molten metal runs in channels through my fiery limbs. Oh, love, oh, pity, oh, fear, oh, pain, oh, the pangs, the bitter pangs of love forsaken. Something down on the floor here. What was that? Flailing around. On Moonlight Bay. You could hear the crickets singing. They seemed to say, you have stolen my heart, so don't go away. Just sing those old and favored songs on Moonlight Bay. Was occupied in intellectual pleasures and energies. But now my soul is harrowed with grief and fear and love and desire. And now I hate and now I love. And intellect is no more. There is no time for anything but the torments of love and desire. Men in eternity, rivers, mountains, cities, villages, all are human, and when you enter into their bosoms, you walk in heavens and earths, as in your own bosom you bear your heaven and earth and all you behold, though it appears without, it is within, in your imagination, of which this world of mortality is but a shadow.
They're in Radio Land are tripping right now.
You're on the air.
I too would like to praise the DJ because the DJ is amazing. I think I was like 22 or 23. Anyway, I was a lot heavier than I am now. 45 pounds, and I was at this ugly hip bar downtown Oakland, where everyone is so alternative and they dress up like they're going out to the Fillmore, but they're just going out to some neighborhood bar. And I was dating this short Jewish guy, and we were out with a friend of ours that was this really hot babe, and they were getting drunk, I think, but I don't really like drinking, and I had a whole bunch of paper LSD, just a big card of it, and it was kind of old, so I just cut off a whole bunch, and I took it, and I had no idea how much it was, but I guess it was a lot because of everyone's reaction. Anyhow, they were getting so drunk, and I got so high that I think we couldn't figure out who could drive home, so we ended up having our friend drive us to my house, who was apparently just seeing double and whatever, and I was so high, they threw me in the back seat, and then this guy that I was dating started making out with me, and tearing my clothes off while she was looking at us through the mirror, and it was really funny, and it was really fun. Then when we got to my house, they wouldn't park in the driveway. They wouldn't give me my clothes back at this time. I was completely naked.
They've also begun to walk, mess with humans in the Mediterranean, taking out folks in the Mediterranean in the last 3 years. There's new behaviors being exhibited that seem to be
naked,
suggestive that they're not really digging what humans are up to. We're not sure if that's what this is all about, but definitely they're attacking boats, ripping rudders off, disabling boats, even sinking a couple of boats. But anyway, so in those families, in the orcas and in others, it's a matriarchal system, and the whales and the dolphins and the porpoises are teaching these languages to their young, right? The same way that we do. Now, how's that teaching going on? We can't anthropomorphize it because we are not sea-bound creatures, right? We're on land here, so we can't as easily anthropomorphize it. But if we do a little bit, it's basically
try one of the mics or another one.
About this mic, yeah.
That seems to work. But try some of the others. They might come in louder. Better. Try the others as long as you're over there. No, keep the headphones on. And try.
Back in the day. Because
you're sunny side up. Can't hear. I get it. Well, everything's, as I say,
and if you have nine sons in a row, TV, movie, baseball teams make money, you know.
Try the other two.
You're sunny side up.
I'm trying them all. I don't
that would work. Well, that's because the damned headphones are weak. Try that last one over there.
Keep your sunny side up.
This one seems...
That one really works.
This one really works.
Yes, are you really headphones?
Mostly.
Put your headphones on your head. That's why they call them that.
Traced to a little box. And where it plugs in that box,
and where it plugs in, nobody knows. Except the king of the leprechauns. That's who hooked up all this wiring.
I think it works.
Excellent. So now you are here as a guest indeed. We'll fade out the old show and create new show.
Out with the old show, in with the new show.
It's good that you can be here.
Bubble, bubble, toil and trouble.
Yeah.
Cauldron burn.
I was going to cut the show down early, as I often do, to go over and draw with the young cartoonists. But as it turns out, I'm not doing that tonight. So we don't have to worry about that at
all. No, I am doing it.
Okay, well, the young cartoonists must be disappointed. I'm sure they're reading eagerly pen in hand.
They don't need me to do excellent cartoons. Oh, gotta be careful about that. You see the way the base has a part that sticks forward?
It's weighted.
Yes, it's weighted. It's poorly done.
It's
poorly
weighted
up,
in its own favor. It's having its thumb is on the scale.
Well, stop twiddling that impotent knob and just don't knock into it a second time.
Twiddle no more knobs. We can hear you fine.
They're clustered around. See if you can gently move them away. We have one that actually works.
Are there political debates in here?
Do who? I don't know if anybody debates anything.
Well, they were debating the existence of prehistoric creatures in the Amazon in the Lost World film.
Oh, yes.
That they were debating. Do they debate that here when you're not around?
Do you mean the Lost World film made by Irwin Allen?
It's from 1925.
That one. Oh, yes. Harry Hoyt. The one directed by Harry Hoyt. Harry O. Hoyt.
I didn't take note of the director's name, but
it was Harry O. Hoyt. Bessie Love and Wallace Beery. And Harry Hoyt. Lois Stone as Lord John Roxton.
With Harry Hoyt. Yes, I remember the Lord John Roxton character.
That one would always remember him.
Yes.
Lois Stone played by Michael Rennie in the Irwin Allen version. Great casting. But a horrible movie.
I am still trying to adjust.
It's very high. The mic is high.
Maybe like this will do.
Move that high chair over there, or maybe this high chair.
It's a radio announcer's law. I'm not the announcer, but
you're coming out. You're like a sportscaster. You're tilted down so you can observe the action.
There's quite a bit of action. I'm observing you at the controls.
I'm going to get the lead out of my treads and focus on the locus. Get some traction on the backstage stuff to our avid and eager audience.
They're avid.
And eager and avid audience.
Avid editing suite.
Got it. Where are you? I know how sweet it is to edit, to have film and video and audio on this show.
Is it being edited?
Well, I thought you were suggesting that it might be.
Well, you said avid, which...
Well, somewhere along the line, maybe somebody edited it.
Avid, as
crossword puzzle players and Scrabble players.
Cross
means eager.
It does mean that. And it's backwards, it's diva. So if you have an avid...
Oh, now it's backwards.
It is curious because divas are eager to have their way
with anyone. Yes, indeed. We're eager to continue with something more lighthearted than Sinbad's gloomy adventures. Yes, we're what eager happened? Beagles.
Oh,
nothing. I delivered the,
Yeah, I told the story of Sinbad's last voyage.
The sixth voyage of Sinbad. So I'll conclude with the seventh next time.
No, I already did that. This is a different time period. I finished Sinbad's voyages and Sinbad himself.
That's all right.
Came to the end of the whole thing.
Listening to a show.
Barely got out of the city of demons alive, but he got out with his wife. She wasn't demon material.
Glad you're here now.
So you were traveling, as you so frequently do.
Where was I traveling to?
Well, that
in the mysterious east.
Ask you.
In the jungles of Malaysia, way out in Southeast Asia.
To the Isle of Pingo Pongo.
In the Vale of Bongo Pongo.
That's the kind of place you go to. You did go there. Huh?
Well, I was wondering where Sinbad traveled to. I mean,
Upamapongo Island.
Right?
You know, Serendib, which he visited, I think, is the island of Ceylon.
Does Serendib have anything to do with serendipity?
It might. It's telling that Sinbad never intended to get there. He sort of wandered and found himself there.
Ceylon, I said, but of course I should have said Sri Lanka, which is the name it has in the modern day.
Oh, well, it does have a map.
Check out this map
of Sinbad's route. See, here he was on the Cyclops domain.
Merfili.
It was known as Taprobane, or Taprobane, however you pronounce it, before it was given its current name of Ceylon, or rather, this isn't its current name. Now they call it something else. Perhaps you'll tell me what I've momentarily forgotten.
This seems like a vague approximation of the Indonesian archipelago.
Well, Indonesia for the Indonesians. Sinbad sailed. You know, he sailed down from Baghdad past Basora, but in the voyage I just related, the captain said, "We are lost. We've been hurled into a sea of perils, which is separate from the rest of the ocean."
And that's exactly where they were. Yes, a huge monster ate their whole ship.
Of course, for Sinbad.
But somehow Sinbad got out of that one.
Order a Malai Komor.
Mm.
And hopefully it'll be like a masala dosa. And
I'll have two.
Not like this treacherous-looking island.
Hmm. Yeah, it's well, just I don't want to stop at a treacherous island. I'll just stay aboard the ship
when
he has
problems.
You guys can have the adventures.
Fish as large as islands. And in the next one, spoiler alert, fish as large as mountains. Also, he had the horrible run-in with the Cyclops.
And then he had a fish bigger than that.
Many of his men.
The Cyclops was a man-eater.
Anthropophagy. Huh. They don't like those little humans.
Hideous creature it was.
It's lucky that he's not doing this in the current age because his men might file for workers' compensation after being eaten by the Cyclops, and that could be worse. Than
he tended to be the only survivor of his adventures. The men were all consumed by monsters.
Not protect the merchant seamen. They were considered risk takers.
Risk takers.
One could be destroyed or killed by going to sea, but one could also come home a rich person and be ennobled
by having met foreign potentates and rulers.
What about his men who were eaten?
Well, his men didn't do so well, at least with the Cyclops, and when they escaped, the other Cyclopes came leading the blind one, which they had blinded, and threw huge rocks, which almost killed Sinbad and did kill a large portion of the rest of his men. In fact, maybe all of them.
I thought it was Odysseus who had the confrontation
that
with
the same thing happened to
Odysseus and Sinbad, which has caused some to say that this whole incident was put in by French translators.
Well, that's ridiculous.
I would say that it's
the same story that is known in all these cultures.
It's a story that could be told by more than one culture in more than one way. But the Cyclops had a particularly hideous appearance.
The son of Poseidon,
and the Earth Shaker, and Lord of the Sea, of eating the humans.
Well, that's sort of a deviation from the standard Cyclops story, where the Cyclops is suave and debonair and well mannered.
He was never.
I never heard he was.
He was always
a rustic bumpkin.
His connections about how he was the son of Poseidon.
Semi-animal monster is what he is.
Okay.
He had
giant
complex behavior
during the day.
So what happens today if you go to a party and you say that you're the son of Poseidon?
People would nod at you politely and edge away.
I suppose they would say that's nice, but they don't know how nice it truly is.
Well, then he would be one of the giants who built giant things, giving them the adjective cyclopean.
Yeah.
Cyclopean structures could only have been built by cyclopean giants
Poseidon, who was also
son
the god
of Poseidon.
The oceans. The Atlanteans worshipped Poseidon the most, which is unfortunate.
Their empire was known as Poseidon.
The ocean don't mix.
Well, it didn't mix in the case of Atlantis, but weren't they able to propitiate their deity and prevent that? Evidently,
no, it sank.
It sank, but what were they doing wrong?
Perhaps it was their time, or the gods fight among themselves.
Then,
and
scorning what a chance to mold and play, the idiot
boys
chaos
into the gods,
blue earth
often our misfortunes
away.
Follow their shenanigans.
Your shenanigans could cost me this election.
Well, wanton, the famous person who said that, whose name I can't recall, said that the boys are just playing sport, but it isn't sport to the frogs who are getting the stones.
Philosopher who had also been a slave, maybe Maimonides or somebody like that.
Or stonecasters.
I still don't know who said that.
This wise man had been a former slave, so he was able to empathize in the way that the slave masters were rarely able to.
Well, slave masters aren't known for their empathy, typically, are they? I mean, the empathic slave master?
In a way, it's best to have no emotional entanglement.
I mean, you get a range of people, and even in reprehensible occupations. So one can be a monster, or one can be kind.
Oh, I see. So there must be a whole little elite of...
As a slave in the ancient world, you were somewhat protected by the fact that you were considered an object of value.
Others would prefer to torture you slowly to death.
That would
would be a bad master there, chop you with a shovel or something, and you'd be through.
No, I suppose.
But of course, you wouldn't do that. Of kindness in these latter cases, but in absence of malice or degrees of absence of malice, there's still the malevolent business of killing you in the first place.
Some people are malicious in absence of their degrees.
I'll say, why, yes.
I always wonder if having, greater awareness, if you're more intelligent, if that leads to kindness, or if there really is no correlation between, say, compassion and intelligence.
Coordination or correspondence, because it takes a certain amount of intelligence to have empathy at all, to understand that other people have a different way of doing things, and yet to accept and acknowledge this and not be outraged and more aggressive than ever. Well, it sounds so simple, but what can we say?
We could say a lot of things.
As Stang says, the average man is as dumb as a post, and half of, these are half of the human race who are dumber than that.
So most people are posts, or half posts.
Well, they're post-structuralists, or believe in French nonsense.
Oh, doesn't it take quite a bit of intelligence to comprehend post-structural French nonsense? For
more
sure?
than I've got, because I don't believe it is anything but the type of philosophy which wears everything down and then sneers at the attempt being made. And this was something, by the way, that Socrates used to do, which is why some people thought Socrates was an asshole. Because
no one would ever call Socrates an asshole.
They called him worse than that. They put him to death as the misleader of young minds and so on. Socrates could not be allowed to stand. But what he would do is he would ingeniously argue both sides of the argument and conclude and make you conclude there was no point in arguing about it at all.
He'd argue the argument out of existence.
Well, we're helpless.
That's the way Socrates' Socratic dialogues break down.
An answer.
It seems fallacious. Fallacious is what I'm trying to say.
No, it's
a wonderful thing, really.
Philosophy, especially the French type that I was describing.
We shouldn't get into this silly controversy.
Other expressions and ideas from being made by suggesting that they all come from venal
vicissitudes. Venal vicissitudes.
Like
vicissitudes can be venal, all right?
When I must bring this one to a close, but I'll be here playing records until I get my stuff put away, and then I must move on to my next appointment.
An appointment. A appointment.
Yes, an appointment nearby.
Well, it was fun to come in here tonight and really gush about all this stuff that I love right now.
Yeah, very much enjoyed having you.
Thank you. Yeah, again, I don't have as much interest, or maybe not again, but for the first time, I don't have as much interest now, maybe as I used to, in movies and television shows, and not even so much things from the past. I'm really, much of my time and focus is on life, life forms, human life forms in Oakland, the people that I'm involved with all sorts of different things over there that are again, connecting with what I'm talking about, what's up.
Life in life's effluence, cloud at once and shower. Joy, lady, is the spirit and the power which wedded nature gives to us in dower. A new earth and a new heaven, undreamt of by the sensual and the proud. Joy is the soft voice. Joy, the luminous cloud. We in ourselves rejoice, and thence comes all that charms or ear or sight, all melodies the echo of that voice, all colors a suffusion from that light.
and gentlemen, the Ask Dr. Hal show, live on radio, ends its Bobcast day on listener-confounded Radio Valencia.fm. We thank those of you who listened now and anticipate those who in the future may listen by offering to those unknown beings such thanks as we have at the same time. As the night eventually passes and gives way to day, so the opposite occurs too quickly afterwards, as shown in these grainy 16mm movies of ducks on a pond. This, I suppose, is supposed to calm everybody down after a long day of viewing. But, in fact, there is an unintended melancholy in the aged quality of the underexposed footage and the realization, inevitably, that the fowls shown are, in reality, less than dust at the present time. And therefore, by extension, so shall we be. Whether we rest in earthen grave or toss forever on the fighting wave of a night-black sea, energy cannot be destroyed, though it be absorbed in the void. Still, it shall be for all time employed. So join us next week, and there will be more of the same mystique. And at this time, I wish you good night and good morning.
The door. Moment of love will haunt me for